All right, we're going to start here on the top of Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph. The year the Gemara continues to discuss the Tumah that we mentioned in the Mishnah. One of the items that was mentioned in the Mishnah was the Rakav, Hamet, which was the decomposition of the mate itself. And there we said, and we discussed yesterday, Melo Tarvad, so it's a ladleful or a spoonful of that Rakav. Now the Gemara discusses what exactly this is. Tarav Banan, Ezu Mate, Sheish Lo Rakav. What's the situation and circumstance in which you do have this rack up this decomposition of the mate? So the cases are mate shenigvar arum be'aron shoshayish ogabe ritzpa shel avanim zeu mate sheish lo rack up. So here the Gemara talks about a certain amount of sanitary or absolute clarity that the decomposition that we're talking about here is decomposition of the mate and not mixed with anything else that's there. So therefore a mate that is buried naked in a coffin or a sarcophagus that is made out of marble or is on the ground, but it's made out of stone or it's bedrock in the ground. Ze mate sheish lo rako. That mate has decomposition to it. Nik barbitz ksuto, if he is buried with his clothing or tachrichim, baron shel eitz, or in a wooden coffin, or al gebi ritzpa shel levenim, or on a ground that's made out of bricks, zeu mate shein lo rakov. That mate does not have rakov because there are other biodegradable items that are there, and the process of decomposition of the mate will also involve decomposition of the other item that is there. And what we're seeing here is that the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim is that it has to be pure rakov. It has to be just the decomposition of the body, not anything else that is mixed in with it, or any afar, or any other outside organic material, outside item, that would be mixed. Amarula, in Rakav, el abba mina basar, mina gidim, o mina atzamot. Now the easiest to read this would be that Rakav comes from the component parts of the body, which are the flesh, the sinews, and the bones, and it would be any one of those, but we're going to clear, what comes clear from the Gemara is that Ula's statement means that you need all three. The Rakav must incorporate Basar Gidim and Atzamot in order to be deemed Rakav. Eitve Rova the Ula. Rakav Abba Mina Basar Tohor. That Rakav that comes from the flesh is Tohor. Ha Mina Etzim Tameh. That which comes from the bone sounds like it would be Tameh. Af Agav Deleka Basar. Even though there is no flesh there. Ema, you should say this. Ema Achi. This is how you should read it. Rakav Abba Mina Basar Tohor. Until there is also a bone with the basar. Not that basar versus atzamot, meaning flesh versus bone, but it's flesh versus flesh and bone. Ha like a gidim. You're still missing the last component part, which is the gidim. Yevshada basar ul atzamot below gidim. That's a natural outcome. If you have basar and you have atzamot, you have flesh and bones, automatically you're going to have gidim over there. Then, why did Ula make the statement, Abba mina basar, umina gidim, umina hatzamot? Why did he mention gidim? If gidim are definitional to basar and hatzamot, he should have just mentioned basar and hatzamot. So Tosafot over here mentions that Ula came to exclude the case of a nafel. We talked about yesterday the case of a nafel, we have a miscarriage of premature baby that didn't have gidim, and therefore, it's not deemed to have rakav if it decomposes. And the Braita will just say is not talking about a case of a nafel. It's just talking about a case where you have a full-fledged baby that is born. In their instance, then if you have basar atzamot, you automatically have gidin. So it doesn't deal with it. In the latter part of the Braita, we also don't answer the way that we answered in the first part. In the first part, we said, oh, basar is tahor. So that means the basar Tahor etzem is not. The Gemara says, no, read it like this. Basar is tahor, basar ve'etzem is not tahor. Then the Gemara says, what about gidin? Why doesn't the Gemara just say, okay, basar is tahor, and then etzem and gidim together with their basar make it tameh. It doesn't do that. It doesn't move on to the next stage to answer the question that way. That is because the Braita should have then written a basar ve'etzem tahor. The basar and the etzem are tahor, and then you would have known basar etzem v'gidim are tameh. The fact that it only writes basar tohor doesn't allow for that answer. And that's why the Gemara gives the alternative answer, which is basar va'atzamot automatically end up with or have gidim. And so that's the way that the Gemara answers, and that's why Tosafot explains why the Gemara went to an alternate answer over here. Amar Rav Shmuel ba'aba or Rav Shemin ba'aba, Amar Rav Yochanan. Shnei mitim shikavran zeim zeh, na'asu galgalim zeh lezeh. We have two corpses that were buried together. They become galgalim zeh lezeh. The word galgalim is going to appear numerous times on this amud, on this daf. Doesn't have a clear definition. You can see here, I'll just show you some of them. You can see in the Mifaresh, he says galgalim, he defines as nasekami shinit arvu zebeze. It's as if they are mixed together. So the galgel means to mix up or stir the pot. So over here it means to mix together. That's one possibility of galgalim klomar hamigalgel zeleze, that they roll on each other or they're mixed together. Tosafot over here brings additional possibilities as to what galgalim is. He mentions uperka mapelat garsinim b'chol asfarim gangilan. So he says that the girsa is not even galgalin, but rather gangilan. V'gam ba'aroch perish galgalim afar, from the word gal, like a tell, like a mound of some sort. It's talking about that there's dust or dirt, there's other things mixed in over here. And so he brings the alternative, which is also not just gal, which is afar, but mit galgel, like a galgala wheel, things that roll over or move to other places. Galgalim is kutrima balaz. The Aruch says that the galgalim is this kutrima. So you have here at least three definitions to the word. One is mixture, the other one is gal, is afar. The other one is galgalim, is a wheel. Other possibility is galgal is something that enwraps, that envelops the clothing or the tachrichim that envelop the mate. They galgal, they're megalgal around the mate. That's another possibility. The basic gist of what is being said here is that there's not just pure decomposition of the mate here. There's something else mixed in with it. And so that's what the word galgalim means. How it exactly means that is what we're seeing that the Rishonim are trying to grapple with. But it's clear that that's what the definition is throughout the sugya here, is they have something else mixed in that takes away this decomposition or pure decomposition of the mate. So, Meitiv Rav Natan, Rekev Haba Mibeit Meitim Tameh. Rekev that comes from two different cadaverous corpses is Tameh. Amar Rova Shekavro Ze Bifnei Atzmo V'Ze Bifnei Atzmo Vir Kivu Vamdu Amalo Tarvad Rakav. So here is a case where each one of them decomposed independently, but then when we put them together, they added up to the ladle full of Rakav. So what Rova is saying is, number one, you have the case that is spoken about by Rav Shmuel, Bar Abba, Rav Shem, Bar Abba, and Rav Yochanan, which is a case where the Meitim decomposed together. In that case, the Rakav of one mate becomes an outside factor for the other mate. And that means that it's mixed together. And you don't have pure rakav, you don't have pure decomposition here. And the law of the Moshe Misinai is that that won't be considered rakav because of the fact that it's mixed with something else. On the other hand, if each mate decomposed independently, and then each mate by itself doesn't have sufficient shiur to reach melo tarvad rakav, if you bring them together, that will qualify to be a melo tarvad of rakav. Rov over here suggests that the situation is a situation in which each one's like half a melo tarvad. Together they equal exactly a melo tarvad. Tosafot already raises the issue as to why. Why does it make a difference if it's exactly a melo tarvad? It could be even more. As long as each one didn't have the sufficient amount, now you put them together so they don't ruin each other because they decomposed independently. He says that you have to see the Gemara coming up. He's going to use this as their proof, and it's going to become important that it's exactly a spoonful from the two meitim. So Amar Rabba Bar Chana Rabbi Yochanan. Gazaz se'aro ukivaro imo. He cut off the hair and buried it with it. He cut off the hair of the mate and then buried it with the mate. Naselo galgalin. That's already, galgalin means that now we have another biodegradable item that's independent of the mate that will dilute this rakav and it will no longer be deemed to be rakav. It's not hatom. We have a mishnah in Olot. Kol shebemeit tamei chutz min hashinayim v'asear v'atziporin. Everything in the mate is tamei, with the exclusion of the teeth, the hair, and the nails. Ubishat chiburan, kulan tmein. And the time that they're attached, then they all are tmein. So now the limud here is that the only thing that is tamei tumata mate is something that the mate is born with. So you hear you have exceptions to the rule because the mate is not born with the shinaim, not born with the teeth. And with regards to siyar v'tziporin, they're what's called mitchalef. They grow, they get cut, they grow, they get cut. So this is not the part of the mate or was not born with the mate. These are things that we grow and then are taken off. So these items are not considered to be part of the mate. So now here, you have shinaim, siyar, and tziporin. When they're attached, they have the din of tamei mate. Now what Tosafot suggests over here is that they're not inherently tamei mate, but rather they become yadot v'tumah. They become extensions of the mate, and therefore if you touch those items, you will be as if you are touching the mate itself. Or if you are mahil, if you make an ol over those items, it's as if you're mahil of the mate. So if the hair extends into the house, then that is an ol or tumat ol, even though the mate is outside because of these chiburim, because they're attached. But what's clear here is once they are severed, they no longer carry the tumat mate. And that's why Rabbi Bar Chana makes this statement over here that once the hair is detached and it's buried there, it's no longer deemed to be pure rakov or decomposition of the mate because the hair is segregated now from the mate and that'll be an outside factor that is involved. So Bayi Chizkia, se'aro ha'omeid l'galeach. He has hair that is ready to be cut. Tziporin omeid l'gazez, or a nail that is ready to be cut. It's reached a length where he normally would cut it off, and it would be removed. We have a principle throughout Shas, which the Gemara is about to ask about, is, my, what's the din here? Mi aminan kol omeid l'gazez ki gazuz dami. Anything that is ready to be cut is deemed as if cut. Odilma hashta mi'aha mechubarim. Here they're still attached. Now you could look at this question in one of two ways. The question could be on Rabbi Bar Chana's statement, or the question could be on the Mishnah. The way that the Mifaresh reads it, and one of the Deot and Tosfot reads it, the question here is, on Rabbi Bar Chana's question, is this Naselo Rekev? This hair that is long enough that you would have cut it off, does that ruin the Rakav of this mate? And it becomes now a mixture of other biodegradable items that will deem it not Rakav? Or, because it's attached, it's still part of the Rakav mate. That's this question according to the Mifreish one day on Tosfot. Tosfot favors the other explanation, which is the questions on the Mishnah. On the Mishnah said that when they are Mechubarim, they have a din of Tamei mate. Are these still deemed to be Mechubarim? If the hair is long enough, or the nails are long enough, then you would have cut them off. Is that still considered to be Mechubarim? Is that still considered to be attached to the mate, so that they become yadot to the mate? That's the question of the Gemara here. Hiski's question is not about Rabbi Bar Chana, but rather on the Mishnah in Olot. It's a very subjective question. Because what's homemade the gazes? I mean, have some people like the hair longer or this shorter. So the way that the Mefresh explains it is that it's hichbid alav, which is the terminology that we learned earlier in the Masechta with regards to Nazir Olam. When can he cut his hair? Hichbid alav, when it gets weighty and heavy on him. There we had the machloket, how much time that is, where it becomes weighty and he can take off his hair. But that's what the Gemara talks about in general. When it gets too heavy, where it's too much, you cut the hair. But again, that's still subjective, because for each individual, when it's considered to be ichbid alav, is also subjective. But let's assume that it got long enough where he normally would have been taking a haircut or cutting his nails. And unfortunately, he passed away, so now he didn't do that. So Gemara says, why don't we nifshot lemi d'Rabba Bar Chana? Let's at least answer this question for Rabbi Bar Chana, because Rabbi Bar Chana said before, "Taima mishum de gazaz." He says the reason that it's considered to be galgalim is because you cut the hair. Halo gazaz, implying that if you did not cut off the hair, lo, that it would not be galgalim. So from there you would see that as long as it's attached, that's sufficient grounds to be considered rakav, or according to the other day, Tosfot considered to be mechubar to the mate. Where it says, no, achi kamar, gazaz, hare say galgalim. Rabbi Bar Chana's statement was this. If you cut the hair off, I am certain that that is galgalim for the mate, and that will not be pure rakav anymore. Lo gazaz mi bayile. On the other hand, lo gazaz, he's not addressing at all. Either that means that it's a safek for him, or that's not part of his statement. He wasn't making a statement to imply that the opposite is true. He just made a statement of certitude, which is, When it's caught, I know it is galgalim. So now the Gemara asks, by Rabbi Yirmiya, this is a very, very difficult Gemara, almost inexplicable. The Gemara, because first of all, you have to understand what it means, and then even when you understand what it means, the flow of the Gemara is not easy. And the reason why everybody's arguing about what it means is because the flow isn't that easy. So here we have, by Rabbi Yirmiya, Rakav Abamina Cave. If you have decomposition that comes from the heel, mahu, what is the din? Ki gamrin in Rakav Haba Mikule Mate. When we talk about Rakav, that's when it comes from the entirety of the mate. Aval da'ati min ha'kev, lo. But that which comes from the heel is not. Oh, dilma lo shna, or maybe it makes no difference. So now what exactly this akev is over here? The Mifereish suggests that the akev is anything below the loins, below the hips. It's the lower part of the body, where he calls that the primary functions of the body are not found. That the primary part of the body, or the main organs of the body, are all found in the upper part of the body. And therefore, maybe the bottom half of the body doesn't have a din of rakav, because it's not integral to the functioning of the body. That's the way the Mifereish explains it. He differentiates between the upper body and the lower body. And he says, akev is lav dafka. Akev is just an example of something from the lower part of the body. On the other hand, Tosafot and the Rosh over here suggest that when we say akev, it literally means akev. It literally means the heel. What's unique about the heel? The uniqueness about the heel is that it's very calloused. Especially if you walked barefoot or you walked in sandals without socks in them, then the bottom of the feet become extremely calloused, and the heel is an area where it's very calloused, and most of the skin that is found in the heel is dead skin. It's not live. So therefore, the question is, that decomposition of the akev, is that considered to be an external factor now because you have the dead skin and it's galgalim, the mate in essence, or is it considered to be a part of the body still because it's attached to the body? That will be the question according to Tosafot. According to the Mifereish, the question is that since the vital organs or the vital part of the body are not in the lower half, so does the rakav from that become galgalim to the upper half of the body, or is it problematic? All right, very good. So the Meiri says exactly what you're saying, which is that you can have dead skin or calloused areas that are not unique to the heel, and akev is just an example of parts of the body that callous over, and that any part of the body that callouses over would have the same question, the same din associated with it. These are the three different approaches that are taken. We'll read the Gemara through based on them, but just know that it doesn't flow easily, again, because of Lashon. So either, is it Rakav Abba Mikulei Mate? It has to come from something that really dies. So that means that, as the Mifereish is going to explain, where the vital organs are, where the body dies from, that's where the decomposition has to come from. For the Balei Tosafot, it means that it has to be something that dies, not something that's dead already, which is the callous skin. And same with the Meiri. About that, imen akev lo, odil malo shnar, maybe makes no difference because it's a part of the body. Tashma, the Tani, Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Yoshaya, Rakav Abba Mishnei Meitim. So this was what we brought before that Rava explained. The Rakav that comes from two Meitim, Tamei. V'isak adatcha Abba Mina Akev Lo. If you're telling me that which comes from the Akev Lo, Zilhacha Dilma Derech Akev Ka'ati. V'hacha Dilma Derech Akev Ka'ati. So here you go, here it came through the Akev. Here it came through the Akev. Now the formulation here of through the heel is somewhat difficult to understand. The Tosafot is going to explain Derech Akev means maybe you have here, you have Rakav that came from the Akev, from the heel. That's going to be mixed in here. You have two Meitim, and then you mix them together. And this is based on what Rava said before. Rava said before that it was exactly a Melo Tarvad. Between the two Meitim, after you had all the decomposition there, you had exactly a Melo Tarvad. So now that you have exactly a Melo Tarvad, if mixed into that Melo Tarvad is also an Akev, then you're missing, you're short on the decomposition, the shear that you need for the decomposition. So that's the question here. If you have two Meitim, who says that you didn't get the decomposition from that part of the body? So for the Rashi, it's going to mean, how do you know that it wasn't the lower half of the body that you got the decomposition from? Or for Tosafot, it means, how do you know you don't have something from the heel that is in here? Gemara says, Idi irkev kulei meit, vakati derech akev hachanami. If the entire mate decomposed and it came through Derech HaKev, now whether it means that it came through the lower half of the body was involved in it, or according to Tosafot means it also included the HaKev, HaKanami, you'd be right, then it would be short here. And then I meant here where one limb decomposed, and is coming through the cave. So for Tosafot, that means that the one limb that decomposed was the leg. And therefore it includes the cave with it. And that's what it means, it comes derech an cave. For the Mifarish, he says that the rakev started down there. That even though the entire body decomposed, the decomposition started from the cave, from the heel part. And that might be part of this, which is that the heel will decompose first because it's already dead or it's already calloused, and therefore it has a faster process of decomposition that's going to be involved. But so he means not a cave in the literal sense, but the lower half of the body will decompose before the upper half of the body. And so therefore the question is, Mike, what's the din here? Do we assume that we have decomposition from these two meitim, that it came from the area of the cave, or did it come from the lower half of the body, according to the Mifarish, or not? Teiku, we leave this unresolved. Anyway, it's a small piece of the Gemara. It's not clear what the Gemara is focused on in terms of derech a cave. What we have is, in general, and we'll speak about this in a more theoretical sense, is that you have parts of the body that are not as either integral or central to the body, or parts of the body that are somewhat dead, quote-unquote, already. And the question is, what's their status vis-a-vis the rakav that we have here? Are they considered to be outside factors, and therefore they are ruined or deemed the rakav not to be rakav, or they're part of the body? And since they're a part of the body, they're all part of the rakav. And that's the basic question of the Gemara, which it leaves unresolved with regards to this rakav. By Rabbi Yirmiyah. Now this triggers a series of other questions, which is, how much are certain items considered to be a part of the body? The case here of an Isha, a woman, Ubar Bimei Isha, if she has a fetus inside of her and unfortunately passed away, Havei Galgalim Olo, is the fetus considered to be a separate entity, or is it a part of the mother? So what is the principle that we see all over Shashas Kaven, Du Amar Mar Ubar Yerechimo? Since we consider the fetus to be like the thigh of the woman, mean that he's simply an extension of the woman herself. It's not like there's a separate being inside of her, it's just a bigger woman now. Hilkach kufahu. He's considered to be like her body. And v'lo havi galgalin. Then the rakov of the baby, or the fetus here, is just like the rakov of the mother, because it is her. It's just another limb of hers. Odilma came into sofo that seit. Or maybe because in the end the fetus will separate from her. Mifresh parish mina. It's considered to be a separate entity. And therefore the decomposition of the fetus will be galgalim for the rakav, the decomposition of the woman. Ve'im tim salomar. So if you want to suggest, so for the Rambam means that the Gemara now just concluded, that ubar, the sofo latzeit, mifresh parish mina. That an ubar that in the end is going to leave the woman is deemed to be as if you have shnei meitim that are buried here. And we just saw before that shnei meitim nasim galgalim ze lezeh. They cause problems for each other. Shechvat zera b'mei isha mahu. If you have semen inside of the woman, what's the din here? Mi amrinan kevin delo itatzar kigufa domi. If you say now, because it wasn't created, therefore it's like her own body. Od gilma kevin demi alma gati lo. Or maybe since it came from an outside factor, therefore, it's not considered to be a part of her body. Mifarej brings two explanations over here, what it means, shikvat zera b'mei isha. He says, kugon shemeita shaita bat panim. She passed away when she was of a birthing age. The stam isha bat panim ita shikvat zera b'meia. You can assume that a woman of birthing age will have shikvat zera inside of her. Here he uses meia, but it means within her uterus. Oh, shenivala samuch l'mitata. But the other possibility is that she had relations close to the time of her death. So in the case of relations close to the time of her death, then the depositing of the semen inside of the woman, how do we view it once it's inside the woman? Does it become a part of her? And therefore it's like part of her goof because it can create a baby or produce a baby, fertilize. Or do we say that Shechvat Zera came from an outside individual, and therefore it's considered to be external to the woman. On the other hand, in the first case, what the Mifresh seems to say is, it has to do with the age of the woman. And if she's a child, if she's of a childbearing age, then we say that she probably has Shechvat Zera. Now whether that means because we assume that she had Bi'ah, because she's of childbearing age? Or is there a natural assumption that a woman of childbearing age has shechvat zera in her? Whether that means that it just, so do we deem it as if, or do we assume as if she has shechvat zera there? That means that any woman that you would find, and we have no idea whether she had bia or not, we just assume that she's, because she's of birthing age, therefore there must be shechvat zera inside of her. And since that is the natural state of the woman, then it would be considered as part of her guf. Or do we say because it came from outside that it's not considered to be a part of a guf? And again, that would have nafkaminot with regards to whether this is galgalim for the rakav or not. Bairo papa, this is your question. Pirsha mahu, the waste that is inside of her body, what's the din of the waste that's in her body? Kevin zelo mikayma bedlo achla, since a person must eat to sustain themselves, chiyutaha, it's part of their life-sustaining functions. And therefore, even though it's going to end up being excreted by the body, when it's inside the body, it's deemed to be a part of the body because it's part of the natural processes of the body. Or do we say no, because food that is consumed, ingested, comes from outside. And so too, the waste that is produced comes from the outside, and therefore it's not deemed to be a part of the body. For again, the question of galgalim, does this then become galgalim to the body and you won't have rakav? Or is it deemed to be part of the body? By Rav Acha Brei de Ravika. Over here we have Oro Mahu. The skin, what is the din with regards to this skin? Does it have a din of rakav or does not have a din of rakav? Because the skin is something that is mitchalef, is changing all the time. That's one possibility. There is an alternate girsa over here. And Rabbi David said over many years ago, I heard him say over in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, that he thought the girsa here should be se'aro and not oro. His hair, what is the din? And you can see in Tosafot already, Tosafot says, what do you mean? We asked about se'aro on the previous amud, and we already dealt with se'aro about whether it was gazuz or it was mechubar. So what Tosafot says over here is, you have to suggest over here, Menira delo savra hach sugya hadamar la'el, se'aro made the gazes. This sugya does not either agree or know about what was said on the previous amud with that se'ar that is ready to be cut. So depending on what you think the girsa is over here, the question is either about oro is skin, because the skin is something that's mitchalef, that it renews itself. Therefore, it's a question if that's part of the rakov or not. Or if you have the alternate girsa of se'aro, then the question is, by hair, what is the din of hair? And again, as Tosfot points out, this is obviously independent of the previous sugya. So then, by Ravuna bar Manoach, kecho v'neo mahu. When it comes to saliva and mucus, what is the din there as well? Are those considered to be independent bodily fluids, and therefore they would be galgalin for the rakav? Or are they considered to be a part of the body, and therefore they will be deemed to be rakav as well? The Mefarash over here makes a distinction between saliva that naturally comes up in the body versus kechol v'neo, which are things that are brought up by force, where a person coughs up that saliva, that mucus. So that would be the differential between kechol v'neo, which are things that are brought up by force, and then he makes a suggestion, he brings an alternative version of what the word oro meant before. He says oro meant saliva before. And is that considered regular saliva that's not brought up by force, is not gathered together? What's the din of that saliva? Is it considered to be a part of the body or not part of the body? And then he brings Vita Mefarshe that or means literally the skin of the body. So here again, we see an alternative there to the word oro, whether it means skin, whether it means saliva, or whether the girsa should really be se'aro, should be hair. But what you have here cumulatively from all these questions is, you're never going to basically have anybody who is raka, because those are all natural items that are found in almost every person. And then how are you ever going to have a scenario in which you have someone who has rakav? And that's what the question is. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Acha l'Rapapa, v'saka datka kohani d'kamri abigalgalin. If you say all of these things are cases of galgalin, they all are external factors that ruin the rakav, then rakav d'mitamei chemishkachala. When are you going to ever have a manifestation, an instance where there really is rakav? No matter where you have a body that decomposes, it's always going to have some of these items with it, whether it's the hair, the skin, the saliva, the keicho, the neo, the perish. All of these items are natural items in the body, and everybody has them. Gemara says, no problem. Could be a case. The Ashkia made the Kalim. They gave him to drink, made the Kalim. Made the Kalim here is a reference by the Gemara to the waters of the palm tree, which is a location in Eretz Yisrael where there were two palm trees and a Mayan, a spring that came from between those two palm trees. That spring, the waters of that spring had laxative properties. And the Gemara describes it there. If you drank it once, it loosened you up. You drank a second cup, it was Michel Shell. You drank a third cup, it cleared you out. It was the equivalent of an enema. That's what the Gemara is suggesting over here, that they cleared out all the perish by taking a drink of the from these Mayan, and it cleared the body out completely. Zachyanashal. Then they used some sort of depilatory that removed all the hair from the body. Veshalkobim made Tveria. Then they boiled them in a made Tveria to remove the skin. So over here, it seems to be addressing each one of the questions of the issues that we had before, which is that we have Oro or Saro, depending which one. You have the depilatory and the Shlika, getting rid of that item. The perish that we talked about, the waste, the excrement, is being removed by the fact that this person cleared out their system beforehand. And as the Mefarei says over here, that also the Keicho v'Neo were cleared out in that case. Whether that's through the drinking or through the process of the boiling, they are also cleared out. And if you need the hair removed, then you have the depilatory over here. So now all those items are removed, and now you have a possibility in this unique, unusual circumstance, you would have a case of Rakov. It would make the situation of Rakov very remote, but we can't come up with a scenario of Rakov. And therefore, that's where all these questions arise, and that's where we're leaving all these questions unresolved with regards to Rakov. Now, if each one of these items, the question is relevant. It's just the cumulative effect of all these items makes it that you won't have Rakak. If it was just one of them we asked in the affirmative, others in the negative, then it's possible you would have Rakov, as long as it wasn't something that is found in every person that passed away. Now, in terms of the Sakya Nasho and the Shalkobim Meit Tveria, over here you can see the effects of the change of the Girsa, the understanding of the Girsa before, which is that, so if you look, depending on what the focus is over here, the Mefarish says, V'sach Kufo Nasho, Shukorin Tara, Ve'vir Seyar Omeid Ligazez. You remove the hair that was Omeid Ligazez. So he's referencing back to the previous sugya, and then Uvshat Oro, and then you took off the Oro, Ve'yatza Keicho V'necho, and you also took out all the fluids that way, all the mucus that's there. The way that Tosfot explains it, the only way to get the hair off is to get to the roots of the hair. The roots of the hair are below the skin level. So what he actually says is that Perish Rashi, the Shira Seyar, is to remove the hair. They boiled him first, kodem shesachu benasha, before they put on the depilatory, lashir asayar arosh v'sayar aguf, ayidei shesachu nasha, nashiru ikrei asayarot. That's how you get to the roots of the hair and pull it out. So Tosafot, seemingly, this is what I mentioned before, does not have a girs of oro up there, but rather a girs of se'aro. And the only reason that you're boiling the skin away is not because you have to get rid of the skin, that was one of the questions, but rather it gives you access to the hair, or it helps you get to the roots of the hair when you put the depilatory on afterwards. That's the way Tosafot learns it. That's why you might favor saying that the question here was sa'aro maho rather than oro maho. On the other hand, the Mefarish seems to indicate that you first remove the se'ar because that's omeid ligazez. That's stuff that would have been cut off anyway, and that goes to the question on the previous amud. And then you have the question here of oro, your shalik. You boil it up, and then you get rid of the skin. So based on that, you've taken care of all these items. Okay, so that's the end there. The Gemara says there is such a possibility, and therefore these questions are all relevant, because you come up with a scenario where you could have Rakov, even though it would be a very narrow case where you would have this Rakov. The Gemara says, Amar Abayi, Naktinan Meit Shetachano, Ein Lo Rakov. A mate that was ground up does not have Rakov, does not have decomposition. Now, obviously, you don't really grind up a mate, but there are times where, unfortunately, the mate is pulverized, and therefore, is there a din of Rakov? In the case of the World Trade Center, you had a situation like that, where the individuals that were found in there were pulverized by the blast and the crashing down, the pressures that happened. So there are scenarios where this is a relevant question. See, Bailu, Tachano v'chazar v'yirkiv, maho. So he says now, if you grind it down, the body, your body's pulverized, it doesn't have a din of Rakov. But what happens if you grind it down, and then it rots, it decomposes naturally that which you have there, what's the din? Midu time elodika basar gidimat samot. Is the whole reason that something is deemed to be rakov is because you have the three component parts, which are basar, gidim, and atzamot, vaika, and then you have odilma, kibriyato, bein, and veleka. Or do you need decomposition like it was in its live state? And that you don't have over here. Teku, we leave that as an unresolved issue. Whether the pulverization or the grinding of the body can then have rakov afterwards because you have all the component parts there, basar, gidim, and atzamot. Or can it not have rakov because rakov is a decomposition from the natural state of the body, not when you've done something else to it in order either to accelerate or change the dynamic of the decomposition. Tani ula bar chanina, mate shechaser. If you have a mate that is missing something, ain't lo rakov. Doesn't have rakov, velo tfusa, velo shkunat kbarot. So obviously what we're discussing here is ain't lo rakov, is the issue of there is no rakov. The other two items are brought along as agav. Tfusa is the earth or dirt around the mate. If you're going to exhume a mate and move them, not only you have to exhume the mate itself, but you have to exhume a certain amount of a fire that's around them that they have acquired, in a sense, from being buried in that location. And you take that along with the mate. That's called a tfusa. Lo shkunat kvarot. Shkunat kvarot has nafkaminot in a number of issues, which is that if you are digging, for instance, in a case here where you're building and you dig out foundations and you find a mate that's there, what's the din of the mate that you find? Are you allowed to exhume them and move them? Well, that depends on whether this is a cemetery or this is a lone ranger that is buried over here. If it's a lone individual that's buried over there, then you can move the mate because they're not kone de makom, number one. And number two is you don't have to worry about it being a cemetery. On the other hand, if you deem it to be a cemetery, then it has a number of dinim. One is that you can't move the mate. They're kone de makom. And number two is, then you have to do a further search. Based on the Gemara in Baba Batra, which says that once you determine that something is a shkunat kvarot, then you have to start checking in certain angles or directions to make sure that the cemetery doesn't extend to in the different directions, because we don't want you digging up the cemetery, so you got to figure out where the cemetery is. So once you have three meitim, it's deemed to be a cemetery. If they're buried in a certain fashion, with a certain distance between them, that shows that this was a proper burial, done in an orderly fashion, that makes sure that it is a beit kvarot. So he says here that a meit chaser doesn't have that din, which is interesting in itself, because it would be a beit kvarot, even if it was a meit chaser, you have to bury them somewhere. But nevertheless, he says that it doesn't have a din of beit kvarot when there's a meit chaser. Now, what you have to say here is that all of these items are halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. You can see that in the Rosh. Tosfot poses it as a question, which is, v'tzarech iyun, lama im tam shkunat kvarot mishum chashash adilma haya sham beit kvarot. The whole problem is that it may have been a cemetery. Afki achad chaser nami nechush. Just because a person is missing a part of the body, why would that not deem it a beit kvarot? You have three people buried in the requisite space and spacing, and also one of them is missing an aver. Now it's not a beit kvarot. That seems ludicrous. But he says, b'malacha l'moshe m'Sinai mutav. He says, if that's a lacha l'moshe m'Sinai, then basically that's it. It's not with a reason. There is no reason to it. That is the lacha l'moshe m'Sinai. If you look later on in the Masechta on Daf Samechei Amud Aleph, Tosafot also raises the issue there as well. And he says, kasha l'avin lama, b'shema lacha l'moshe m'Sinai hu. Says that it's hard to understand this din of shkunat kvarot. And he says, what you might have to say is that it is halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. So you see Tosafot grappling with this issue in terms of a logical reason for it. In the end, he has to say it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai because it doesn't seem to make so much sense. The way that other Rishonim deal with it is to suggest that a mate that is chaser is indicative of something happening in that location that caused some sort of trauma to the individual, whether it was a battle, whether it was some other item that caused trauma, and that means that they were buried there because of the trauma, not necessarily because it was a beit kvarot. So the mate being chaser is indicative of an ulterior motive for the burying here rather than simply a cemetery. All right, meitve. Lo, imamart b'mate. So here again, you have a Mishnah Nediot that says this. It's trying to compare an eiver min hamate to an eiver min hachai. And it says, just like by an eiver min hamate, if you have kazayit basar that comes away from it, it is tamei. Maybe she would say the same thing about an eiver min hachai, if you have kazayit basar that comes away from it. The Mishnah says, lo, imamart b'mate, Mate has certain chumrot that are associated with it. You have rov, rova, o, melo, tarvad, rakov. In the case of mate, you have all these dinim. One is rov, which we saw before, rov binyano, rov binyano. We have rova, which is rova kav atzamot, which was also deemed to be tamei when it derives from rov binyano, rov binyano. O, melo, tarvad, rakov. It has a ladle full of rakov. Tomar b'chai. We're going to say it by a chai, she'ein lo rov, velo rova, velo melo torvad rakov. The chai, Abram and a chai, doesn't have any of these dinim. Hechidami. What's the case here? Dirke of chadever. The only way that you can have someone who is alive, it's an Abram and a chai, and it has rakov, or an Abram and a chai has robat zamot, is when you're talking about a single limb. Because if it's the entirety of the person, they're not alive anymore, it's not an Abram and a chai. It's only an Eiver Minachai if the person's alive and the Eiver detached from them. So that means the case in the Mishnah Ediot where they're comparing Chai to Mate is saying Mate has it, Chai doesn't have it. What's the case of Chai? It's clearly where you have a single Eiver. The Kabate, Gabe Mate, Afilu Chad Eiver. That means that by a Mate, the comparison says that by Chai, they don't have any of these features, but by a Mate, you do have these features. That means by a single limb, you have the features of Rov Binyan Minyan, Rova kavatzamot and Melo Tarvad Rakov, which is what we're interested in, is that you can have Rakov from a single limb. And we just had the statement of Ulur Bar Chanina that if you have a mate that's missing something, then there's no Rakov. Over here, you're talking about it's missing almost everything. You just have the Eiver. So mate, afilo chareiver, ika Rakov. Miktani ha mate. It doesn't say that a mate, just like the Chai has it. Hakamash Malan, shum mate, yesh lo Rakov. Shum Chai, ain lo Rakov. Rather, it's telling us that the category of chai never has rakov associated with it. The category of mate does have rakov associated with it. It doesn't mean that the cases are identical. It doesn't mean that the Eiver min chai, which doesn't have rakov, in the equivalent Eiver min mate, it has rakov. No. Mate in general, in that category, you has rakov. A chai never has rakov. Doesn't mean that you can prove from here that just one Eiver min mate would have rakov. Boy rovo. Hirkiv kishu chai. The limb rotted while he was alive. V'chazaru mate, and then he dies. So it seems here that the limb is still attached, and it's decomposing on the body prior to his death, gangrenous limb, or it's possible that it detached, and it was an Eiver min chai, but then he dies, which seems to be what the Mefarash is saying over here, that the Eiver actually detached while he was alive, rotted, and then was buried next to the individual after they passed away. Mao, what's the din? Kigmiri rakov dirkov kashu mate. We only say that when it decomposed after the point of death. Odilma ashta miyamait. Or, does it not matter when the decomposition happened as long as he passes away? Once he's passed away, everything is deemed to be rakov and decomposition. Tashma, they bring the same Mishnah from Ediot. Lo imamart b'meit sheish lo rov v'rova melo tarvad rakov. Tomar b'chai v'chule. Taima mishum chai. That's only because he's alive, does it not have any of these features. Ha, mate. If he was to die, yesh lo rakov. It has this feature, meaning that death is the trigger point for deeming something rakov. That means even if it decomposed prior to that point in time, as long as you cross the threshold of death, that will create this rakov. Where it says, miktani ha, mate. The Mishnah Ediot doesn't say if he dies. Ha, kamash malana, just again teaches us, Shum mate yesh lo rakov, shum chai ein lo rakov. Again, it's not a continuum where you say, when he's alive, there's no rakov. When he dies, then it becomes rakov. No, it's telling you that within the category of the world of mate, there is rakov. Within the world of chai, there is no rakov, but you can't prove where that threshold is or where that happens. Boy rovo. Now we have a segue into a sidebar here, but it turns out the sidebar probably has more relevance than the key machloket that we've been talking about here with regards to chaser, which is that this is something that comes up more often, which is boy rova nimala shechasra mahu. A nimala that is missing from itself, a part of its body. What is the din of a nimala? Shi'ura gemirin la. The shi'ur is alacha lamosh misinai v'chaser, and it's missing. O biria gemirila. Or do we say it's an entity that we learned? Va'ika, and you have that here. What the question is that a nimala is below the minimum shiur that you would otherwise be chayav for in achila in any other instance. It's too small to be a kezayit. Yet, if one eats a nimala, they will be chayav. One eats an ant, they'll be chayav. That is because it's a whole entity. That's the question here. What is the focus on here? Is the focus here on whole? or is the focus on entity? If it's focused on whole, then if it's missing something, you no longer will be chayav because you didn't eat the whole ant. On the other hand, if it's the focus on the entity, which is it's a live being, as long as it's still alive, even if it's missing one of its antennae, or if it's missing one of its legs, as long as it's still alive, it's a birya, and therefore you'll be chayav for it. That's the question here. How does chaser impact on this shear of nimala? So Amar Rav Yehuda min diskarta tashma. The pasuk says bahem yochol bikulan. You would think in all of them. Tamalomer mayhem from them. E mayhem. If you think mayhem yochol miktsatam, you would think even a portion of them. Tamalomer bahem ha ketsat. How did we resolve this issue? What they're speaking about here is the psukim in Parshat Shmini that talk about the tuma of the shmona shvatzim. And over there it says that kol nogea bahem bemotam. You come in contact with them. And it also says, v'chol asher yipol alav mehem bimotam. So in one case it uses bahem, and in one case it uses mehem. Mehem would imply a portion of a whole object. Bahem would imply the entirety of the object. So how do I resolve or reconcile these two words? Ha, okay, it said, yigab miksatan shehu kekulan. So you touch a portion of them that's deemed to be like all of them. That is the size of a lentil seed. So that's what it means, that if you touch a lentil seed worth of one of the Shmona Shvatzim, then you are Tamei. The way that the Mifaresh explains it is, Shuadasha Sheshavek Kukulo. Mifaresh keeps saying over here, Rubo Kukulo, Rubo Kukulo. I'm not sure I would have gone down that derech, even with the ant before he says Rubo Kukulo when it's missing an aver. I don't think that's the focus of the Gemara. The Gemara is not named Rubo Kukulo. The Gemara is focused on the fact that it's alive. And because it's alive, that's considered to be a whole entity, even though it's quote-unquote whole. It's not whole, but it's wholly alive. And therefore, it would be considered to be a whole entity. But again, the Mefresh over here focuses on Rubo Kukulo. And again, by Ke'adasha, he says that that is the amount. On the other hand, you could argue that Ke'adasha is the smallest item that they found, which is Kena Chomet, the snail, in its infancy, in its beginning, is the size of an adasha. So that's shmamina, shiura, gemirila. From that it sounds like the absolute shiur is what's important over here. Chazal determined that it's ke'adasha, and if you don't meet the shiur, you're not going to be chayav. It seems to be that the ant would have to be whole and fully whole, because that's the shiur, and we're focused on the absolute amount, not on whether it's alive or not. So the Mefarish says, you see from here that the shiur is essential here, and below that shiur, you're not deemed to be tamei. Tosfot on the other hand says it's parallel to the case of nimala, because shmamina shiura gemira mi debeinan ke adasha. Shari chomet gam hi yavik tchilato be adasha. The chomet in its infancy is a kadasha, but that's ainu imra glav karnab. That's with its antennae, with its legs. Hikom akom hi chatech minei purta. If you cut off a piece of it, it would be below an adasha. It would survive. Yet we still require that minimum shiur of a kadasha. So you see from here that it has to be literally the kadasha, even though the item has the ability to survive below the level of an adasha. You'll say the same thing with regards to the nimala. Summer of Shmaya. No, kibi inan shiura, bidalo havia kadasha. Lo mitame delo nafla banishama. The reason that when you're below the level of an adasha, that it's not mitame, is because that item does not live. There's no living item at that size, and because there's no living item at that size, it is deemed to be not tame, because it's not an extension, or it's not from that life of that animal. On the other hand, elo nafla banishama, if you have such a circumstance in which the item is alive, even though it's below that minimal shiur, like here, we have an ant that is smaller than the adasha, but yet it's still alive. Over there, lo tibaylach, that is not a question. Over there, it would be considered to be something that is problematic. So what you have to say is that the din of adasha is talking about shvatzim that reach much larger sizes, and this is their minimum threshold. But a nimala, who even in its full state, only maybe reaches an adasha, then that can't be the shiur that's relevant by a nimala. Or, you have to say that when it comes to the chomet, it only reaches a point where it has life in it, or life force in it, once it crosses over that threshold of ke'adasha. Whereas by the Nimala, it is alive or has life force in it, even below Ke'adasho, and therefore there's a distinction between them. So now the way the Mifaresh learns over here, the way he reads is Avanafla by Nishama Lo, but if it already has the Nishama in it, Lo, meaning that that's not the case, Tibaylach, and now it'll remain a question. Similar to what we found in other places in Nazir, that Tibaylach is like a Teku, which is that the question remains now, what is the determining factor here? Is it that it's alive? Or is it that there is a Shiur? Gemara tried to bring a proof from the Shmona Shvatzim that there was some sort of minimal Shiur, and we reject that proof. So what the Mefaresh says, when we reject that proof, we're not giving an alternative explanation. And we're giving an alternative explanation, but it's not the only explanation. That means it could be either way. Since it could be either way, we're back to square one, which means we still have the question at hand. On the other hand, both the Tosafot and the Rosh see this as a conclusion of the Gemara. The Gemara is now concluding that it does not matter. Shiur is not important. What is important is that it's alive. And that's what it says, that Rosh says over here, Kegon Nimala Chaya HaChashuva Birya Afilu Chaseira. It's still considered to be a birya, even if it's missing something. Ho'il v'adayin yechola lachyot. Because it lives. As long as it can live, it's considered to be a birya. It's considered to be a whole entity because it survives. So adash is not a factor at all. No, that's obvious from the answer of Rav Shmaya. Just that the question is, Rav Shmaya's answer, according to the Rosh and the Tosafot, Rav Shmaya's answer seems like it is definitive, which is, this is the way to look at it, and this is the halacha. The halacha is that shiur matters when you're dealing with larger entities, then the chadash is the minimum shiur for those larger entities. For smaller entities, if they can live below that minimum shiur, they will be deemed to be a birya, and you'll be chaya for consuming them. But that assumes that you consume the birya. What's deemed to be a birya? As long as it can live. If it can live, it doesn't matter if it's missing some component part of the body, as long as it's alive, that's a birya, and that's a conclusion, according to the Tosafot and the Rosh. According to the Mefaresh, when Rav Shmaya comes in, he's offering an alternative explanation. He's saying that that's not definitively the way. He says, I could explain that limud in this manner. Since I could explain it that way, you can't prove to me from that that shiur dictates. Maybe birya dictates. But I don't know, and therefore it remains a question according to the Mifaresh. And that's why many kashrut organizations suggest that with items that normally have infestations in them, that the best way to utilize them is if they are frozen and they are blended, because that avoids this problem of birya. Because then, because of the freezing process as well as the chopping of the item, ensures that there's no birya left if there was any issue that existed. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Nun Bet Amud Aleph.